Back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. Text us at the same number. I want to thank Milwaukee County Behavioral Health Division for agreeing to do this series on my show, and I'm really excited about it. Sandy, So President Biden is sending additional arms to Ukraine. Are we getting, is this going to be not news anymore, is it?
No, I mean, the interesting thing, like everyone predicted, this would begin to retreat to the back pages of the newspaper the way Afghanistan did after, 20 years. It was ongoing, and most people wouldn't have known we were there after about year five. But with the numbers getting pretty big, we've got every month we're writing a very big check, and we're sending a lot of stuff into a war zone that's clearly our sending that stuff is prolonging the war.
So you talked about this because also in today's Newsweek, billions in U.S. aid vanished in Afghanistan.
Right.
Vanished in Iraq. Wherever we are, why are we sent?
Well, we don't have to worry about that because Ukraine is not a corrupt country. Oh, wait a minute.
In fact, we used to condition
our aid. In fact, that famous telephone call between Trump and Zelensky was devoted to the fact that aid from the United States to Ukraine needed to be premised on Ukraine eliminating corruption. Ukraine's a terribly corrupt place, and sending $50 billion to Ukraine is bound to end up in the pockets of people for whom it was not intended.
So we spent $134 billion in Afghanistan, and $40 billion was kind of lost. How do you lose $40 billion?
Well,
how do you not even be concerned about that?
Unaccounted for, because I think this whole process of buying friends in war is all about lots of cash, easy cash, giving cash to the liaison, the troops that quote liaison close quote with the locals in Afghanistan. Liaisoning really meant handing out money and securing allies who were your friends in many respects because you bought them.
But what we get is, Sandy, is that we are helping the people of those nations, and what you're saying is the money is really not getting to you.
Well, in war, it's expedience. What's the biggest bang for the buck? And there's lots of bucks to spend. So, it's notorious. It's happened in all wars. War is a time of profiteering and corruption.
So the nuclear plant again in
Ukraine, Zaporizhia. Zaporizhia.
Yeah. But we're, yeah, so you're getting better at pronouncing.
Yeah, I figured it out.
I won't even try it.
There's three Z's in that word. How many words do you have tried to pronounce it have three Z's in it?
My point is there's some horrible signs that we're headed for catastrophe, right?
Well, maybe. You know, I think the word nuclear causes everyone to be... Right now, that nuclear plant has only one of its units in operation. And what's happened now is that I talked about this in one of the earlier shows. There were five lines coming into that plant, bringing power into the plant from other sources. And most recently, all five, the fifth of those lines, the last line at least, if there were four or five, there are no longer any external sources of power to Zaporizhia, so it's dependent on power that's generated by its own plant,
right,
or by a diesel backup generator. That diesel backup generator is capable of protecting the plant and keeping it safe if need be, although that's dependent on having diesel oil as fuel. Like I said, there's no question that a nuclear power plant in a war zone does pose some dangers.
You know, Sandy, with all the other things that are going on, the elections and all those things, and Donald Trump, and Ukraine is an afterthought, right? I mean, for the most part, and I know in the print media, maybe not in the print media as much as, you know, on the cable networks and on regular television, it is an afterthought.
Yeah, and you know, I was thinking about this on the drive. I tend to think while I'm driving as I come out here. And today what I was thinking about, one of the problems that I think we have in the modern world is that news is yesterday. News is not tomorrow. And so what we all tend to be thinking about and the information we get fed is all about what happened. And it isn't like what happened last week or last year. It's what happened in the most recent news hour. So we're following life in terms of getting information about it, hour by hour, looking in the rearview mirror. And I think it's caused us to stop looking forward to figure out what are the consequences of what just happened in the last hour. We end up having the news media provide lots of speculation about that. But I'm not sure we, as the human beings who need to do it, are thinking about what's to come, what's happening, what it's going to cause, and taking the right kind of steps to maybe guide the arc of history so we can guide the arc of those news hours. And so things like the Ukraine, which is terribly important, get pushed out of the way by the most recent news hour event, the death of Queen Elizabeth. Suddenly that's the most compelling news hour event.
Which is... anyway, let's go to the phone lines and CJ. CJ, how you doing?
Hi, Earl and Sandy. Thanks for taking my call.
Is there any chance we can keep you on task? Any chance at all?
Well, the task is you were talking about the press onto the next event, this intentional distraction of Mar-a-Lago. The intentional distraction focus on Trump. You do it daily, Earl, because your focus, we don't want to evaluate the performance of this president, the failures of this president. It started way back in Afghanistan.
Mm.
13 soldiers lost, $80 billion left there, giving up strategic location. The Air Force base there, you know, and then on to Ukraine, the move by Putin. He never invaded a country when Trump was president.
Well,
I don't care if Trump runs again, but
yes,
the mere fact that we had 1.4% inflation.
Hey, CJ, yes, you do care if Trump runs again. You want him to run again.
No, I don't. I want his policies back, Earl, that gave us affordable rent, gas.
Those weren't Donald Trump's policies. Those weren't Donald Trump's policies alone. He didn't.
Well, wait a minute.
That.
In fact, let's just unbundle it, CJ. You know, when we talk, You tend to talk like what this high school debate process has turned into, which is speed talking, giving as many points as possible in the space of a minute, becoming sort of an incomprehensible jangle of ideas. And that's, I'm not criticizing you. I'm just saying that I think what we need to do is
unpack some of it.
See, can't we just unbundle one idea and talk about it so that we can have a sensible discussion? Because if people just talk at one another like they're running for office or like they're trying to accomplish an election victory and walk away from a conversation trying to figure out whether they won or lost the conversation, I mean, quite frankly, CJ, and again, this is not a criticism, it's an observation, you call this station up and have this conversation so that you can figure out and you can try to hang up thinking, figuring out whether you won the conversation or not, and whether you, or whether,
I want
or whether we lost,
no,
whether
facts.
We lost, or the whether we lost the conversation, and you talk about a bunch of facts. So one of the facts you just said was that under President Trump we had affordable gas prices, and the fact is that the policies of Donald Trump to open up exploration for oil in the country didn't have an effect during his 4 years, because the lead time for accomplishing the increase in production from a well is longer than that. And so you
Sandy, what did Joe Biden do on day one?
What
executive order?
Yes,
did
and he
sign
yes, yeah, yes,
to
and it didn't
energy.
And it didn't reduce production of oil. What reduced production of oil was the pandemic, which set in during the period of Donald Trump. 2019 was the peak of oil production, and when the pandemic started and the recession started, production went down because consumption
went down. So guys, hang on a second, and we've got to go to break. When we come back, Wisco, Paul, and Tom, and others. We'll be right back.
Thank you.
At 844-967-2789. It's 844-967-2789. You text us the same numbers Friday. Friday's with Sandy Williams. Let's go to Wisco Paul. Hey, Wisco Paul, how you doing? What do you say?
Hey, I'm doing okay. I love you and Sandy together. You guys put on a great show. I just driving in the Cottonwalk area and tuned you in, and voila, I get to hear CJ being CJ. You know, if Trump and Johnson have made or have had this many accomplishments on the positive side, I don't see any, then why are they running ads against Mandela Barnes on social media the way they are? It's despicable. I've met the man several times. He's a good and decent man. And he's looking out for the middle class like you, CJ. And Johnson's ads, I don't know if they're going to work or not, but you see them on YouTube and other venues. They have him, I'm not going to get into it,
let me say this. Sandy and I talked about that earlier, and Sandy says that those kind of ads do work.
Well, you know, the problem is, the question is, if they're running them, so they've done some research and they believe they work. And so that tells us something about the audience, really. It tells us as much about the audience as it does about the people who are running the ads. And to me, what it tells me is that we all need to examine ourselves and figure out what it is about us that would cause an ad like that to resonate, because those ads are clearly dog whistle ads aimed at emphasizing one particular aspect of Mandela Barnes and playing on it from various angles, right? But the main angle that the main issue that they're addressing is essentially the fact that he's got black skin, and now we come at that from various angles that people profile people with black skin about, and they're trying to pin all that on Mandela Barnes. And the fact is that it might work because the fact is that
it's worked before.
Well, we do subconsciously profile one another, and I'm not talking just about race now. We profile one another, and we need to look at it on the table, look at it straight in the eye. When we realize we're profiling people, we can back off and say, "Okay, I'm profiling. That's not fair. I'm going to look at you objectively instead." What's happened now is that analysis about race has turned into from the right. They're calling that wokeism. They're calling that the critical race theory school teaching, and they're basically saying, "Oh yeah, we can talk about profiling, but we can't talk about it with respect to race." Okay, we aren't going to talk about it there. And they're even in some states, they're making it unlawful for corporations to have seminars put on for employees to talk to them about the subconscious profiling and how it might affect the workplace. And so that's apparently that's verboten, okay? So if we're going to really make it impossible for us to self-examine about that, then those ads for Mandela Barnes on social media, unfortunately, might work with some audiences.
And they wouldn't be investing the money. They're investing in them, Sandy, if, as you stated, if they hadn't done the research and said this has a chance of working.
Yeah. So, I mean, to me, yeah, it's despicable they're doing it. It's despicable they're playing that note that some people hear. But and I'm not calling it despicable. I just think it's instructive that a bunch of us subconsciously hear that note and it makes a difference to us. And what we have to do as a society is face up to that and work on it.
Thank you very much for the call, Wisco Paul. Tom, go ahead.
First off, MAGA CJ and MAGA Republican, not the Paul that just called in, but the other Paul, they need to know that Mar-a-Lago is not Mar-a-Lago. It's actually MAGA Loco is the actual name of that place, just so they know. They're really, really running out of things. I mean, CJ talks about Afghanistan. Well, I'm pretty happy we're out of Afghanistan myself. So, therefore, I'm not sure why he keeps on bringing that one up. Immigration doesn't really affect a whole lot of people up in the Midwest. It affects more people in Southern California, and we have no problem with immigration. So I'm not sure where that one's going to go. Gas prices, we have gas prices going down every single day here. I don't know about Wisconsin, but here it's going down every single day. So he doesn't have a leg to stand on there.
Well, I've seen it down to 340, so it's still declining, Sandy, as you said it would.
Yeah.
Personal responsibility, he talked about the other day. I don't remember George or criminal Bush ever taking personal responsibility or Donald Trump taking personal responsibility for anything. So, again, he doesn't have a leg to stand on. Defund the police. One person said that, and actually it was reform the police. The whole idea was to make sure that we're not sending armed soldiers into domestic violence-type situations. And as far as Black Lives Matter goes, I haven't heard much about Black Lives Matter, and you haven't heard anything about Black Lives Matter ever being a problem in terms of the actual people that were running the thing, versus the Proud Boys and all those guys. The actual organization was very, very peaceful. So they've really run out of everything. So I guess now they're going to go for race. I guess now they're going to go Russian Ron and MAGA Michaels. Are going to go, after race. And I just hope that everybody is registered to vote. You check your voter registration. And people in Milwaukee and progressives and black people and all types of immigrants or whatever it may be, I hope that you all get out there and just overwhelmingly vote. Vote ahead of time. Vote by mail.
Hey, Tom,
get that done early
we can get out of this. We got to go to a break, man. Thank you very much for the call. 844-967-2789. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Friday. That means Fridays with Sandy Williams. And Sandy, while we were on the break, I asked some questions of you about something that I was reading that was telling me that Ukrainians were fleeing into Russia. And you would think that if I'm at war with a country, then why would that country allow my citizen, the citizens of the nation I'm at war with,
mm-hmm.
to come into my country?
Well, I mean, you know, because it isn't exactly as maybe the press has led us to believe that everyone in Ukraine are nationalists who are hell-bent on being separate from Russia. The fact is that Ukraine and Russia are very much brother and sister, and almost everyone in Russia and everyone in Ukraine has relatives who live in one or the other of the countries. There's 44 million Ukrainians, 142 million Russians. Particularly the western half of Russia is European Russians, and the people who live in Moscow and St. Petersburg, particularly Moscow, almost all of those people will have relatives in Ukraine, and almost all of the Ukrainians have relatives in Russia. So it isn't exactly a foreign country to them. They are ethnically the same people. And when the USSR was intact, they were very much a part of the USSR. And so what happened when war started, first of all, when there's a big war, people flee for safety, right? You don't want to live in a house where there are rockets
right.
going over your head. So people flee for safety. We talk about all the people who fled for safety to the West. Well, many of the people fled for safety to the East, which was Russia. And so, yes, Russia has lots and lots of refugees into Russia. They've accepted them. There are many for instance, the city of Rostov nearby has many Ukrainian refugees there being relocated temporarily. Most of the Ukrainians who fled have done so. If you talk to them, they'd say they've left temporarily. They intend to return when the war is over. And so, you know, we think of this as being a strident war between a country, all of the Ukrainians united in the idea that they want to go to war
right,
to maintain
right.
their independence, when probably a significant number of those people don't care which government they live under. They want a peaceful government that allows them to live, have safe family lives and relative prosperity.
So why it's so important that we get to the crux of that, Sandy, is when Russians accept those refugees,
mm-hmm.
they accept the financial responsibility associated with making sure, because when they come across the border, they're coming with nothing.
Well, in fact, in the Donbas, one of the things that Russia is doing, that which we, our press has been highly critical of, and so has the Ukrainian government, is like the Donbas, they've informally annexed, okay? By annexed, that means they've made them essentially a part of Russia. And they've made it very easy for people residing in those areas to become Russian citizens. Well, Russia does have public health care. And so, you know, what they're doing is undertaking some obligations associated with those citizens. So,
which means the Russian people have bought into the sacrifices in addition to what they're making to be at war, but even to bring in the people they're at war with and share their resources. I mean, am I seeing that wrong?
No, you're seeing that correctly. And you know, and that's because this war is much more complicated and involves many more layers of issues than the media discusses with us, or maybe even our government understands, because what's involved here is sort of a centuries and decades of cultural history, cultural intertwinement, cultural both tensions and synergies, and so it's not like we see it.
So Sandy, what I would say then is, when you understand that part of this, it makes you think even harder about why we continue to put those resources there. Let's bring Bob in. Hey, Bob, how you doing? Thank you very much for the call. You say what?
Well, good morning. Good morning, Earl. And
Sandy.
The reason I'm calling, I'm responding with something that was brought up earlier, and that was price of gas.
Right.
And yesterday I had 9 solar panels installed on my south-facing roof. This will proceed, and I'm estimating it'll take 2 more months to get the electricity hooked up to the solar panels. So my question to other people is, if you're really concerned about the price of fuel, what are you doing about it? And at this point,
let me ask you, Bob, do you think you're taking a risk at this, or you're absolutely confident that this is the right way to go?
Well, I mean,
you've already made a decision, but I'm sure you made it with a lot of thought.
Well, any time we do anything with money or anything with our lives, is taking a risk. A little bit about my background, Earl, if I may. I hold a degree in public and environmental administration with a dual in policy studies. So I'm committed to taking actions based on that. And the critical thing I see at this point is, am I spending money on gasoline and natural gas, or am I spending money on ways to get around and do those same things without doing it? And the way I look at it, the sun is there. I need to collect it, and I need to heat my home with it. And not with natural gas.
Hey, Bob, I'd love to have Sandy have a conversation with you. Hang on.
Well, Bob, you're to be commended. I think you're right, though, that it is, you're making an investment in the public interest. It will probably take you some time. If it was an investment pure and simply in getting a payback in your money, that probably is it's a long-term payback for that kind of thing. But
correct, if I ever see it.
Yeah. But so you're making an investment for the public, and quite frankly, I do think if we as Americans had more of community values and more concern about the community, more of us who had the capacity to do it would make these investments in the public interest rather than just in our private interests. So you're definitely to be commended on that.
The amount of money that I'm not going to tell you what I'm putting in it, but the amount of money is less than I would put into buying a new car.
Mm-hmm. Well, so
yeah. So I'm not putting money in a new car. I'm putting money in my home.
Yeah, but with respect to the price of gas, and of course, if we're really worried about and interested in reducing the use of gasoline and greenhouse gases, the people who are really interested in that don't jump up and down with joy when the price of gasoline goes down, because that might encourage more people to use it, more SUVs, more high consumption. But, you know, the world is clearly going to change, and the question is, will it change fast enough? we've already got major automobile manufacturers committing to not producing gasoline using automobiles by 1935, by 1930. We've got a number of manufacturers saying we're not going to produce cars that use gasoline in the not too distant future. So we're headed there. We just need to get there faster.
You know, Sandy and Bob, you guys talk about it. I hadn't thought about it. Well, I had thought about it, but I hadn't brought it up. Look at the size of some of the vehicles that they have produced.
Yeah.
Their monstrosities.
Yeah,
the Lincolns, the Escalades.
Well, one of my sons, they bought a new Suburban because they have a big family.
Yes,
the big Suburban is I would call it a land yacht.
Yeah, these things are absolutely
huge. You don't park them; you moor them.
And I hear people say, "Well, they're the gas. You know, they're really, you know, the economy of it." And I'm saying, I don't care what you say.
Yeah.
The biggest tanks, some of them. There's a Jeep, I think, that they've got out that's, when my wife was buying the car, I in the showroom, I looked in this thing, and I couldn't believe how huge it was. So part of the society, Sandy, in this country, in the business community, is still tapping into that we're not ready to change this.
Right, and it's true. In fact, people have gotten so used to SUVs, they get in my... I've got a station wagon that sits the normal level, and everyone says, I don't like to sit this low in a car. It's like, no, this is a normal car.
Yeah.
This isn't a truck.
Well, those things you don't want to call trucks because they're so luxurious, but... That's what they are.
Well, yeah. In fact, I think those who aspire to be the sort of a manly term for a car like that is a truck.
Yeah. So, Bob. Thank you. Anything else, Bob?
No, it's just that I think we're happy about the price of gas going down. I'm happy about that for the individuals that are caught up in having to spend money on gas, but. We're actually more beneficial to having a higher price of gas because that will cut down on consumption of it.
There you go.
All right, Bob. Thank you very much. Spoken like a true...
gasoline is in many ways subsidized through its whole production process and the way it's taxed and everything. And so, you know, the price of gas in Europe has always been a multiple of the price of gas in the United States because it isn't similarly supported in all the ways there.
Sandy, I just, when you brought the thing up about these big, and they're getting more and more, they're getting bigger and bigger and bigger every time out. The next one's bigger than the last one. Each dealer or manufacturer is creating an even bigger vehicle. And so when you're talking about the cost of gasoline,
mm-hmm.
you know, when the fill-up is $120, or $140.
Well, I think the hopeful thing is that basically all the major manufacturers in the world have both announced and have demonstrated that they're in the process of moving to electric cars. And so when cars become electrified, the difference in the range of the automobile based on its weight will begin to make the buyers of them have a trade-off in their mind between size and the conveniences associated with being able to drive your vehicle 300 miles between charges rather than 100 miles between charges. Because, you know, if you put an electric motor into a Suburban, most of that Suburban is going to be filled with batteries if you want to have a very long range because it's such a heavy car.
I'm surprised you haven't switched over to...
An electric car?
Yeah.
No,
Probably soon.
Yeah, my next car, I think, will be... I'm confident will be electric, yeah.
Yeah, you know, and the more you read about it, the more you hear about it, the more... And again, these are still the early stages of electric vehicles,
you know, I think gasoline is in our DNA, that we, you know, we've all been raised with it, so that the sound, the burbling sound of a gasoline engine is important to us as a concept for a vehicle, because every aspect of electric vehicles is better in terms of speed and in terms of all the things that, if you're looking for fancy cars that do fancy things, electric cars do them. The Taycan Porsche is the best performing of the Porsches, right?
Yeah.
And they've got a sports car version of it that's the best performing, and that's true of all of them.
So I was thinking the other day, I was reading something the other day that was talking about the fact that all of these different people are going to have to be retrained when it comes to repairing. You know, the guys who repair these things. All right, gotta go to a break. 844-967-2789. We'll be right back. The guys who... Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. You can text us at the same number. It's Friday. That means Friday's with Sandy Williams. Sandy, I know where I want to go.
Okay.
One of the most arrogant guys that I think there's ever been breath, you know, blown into.
Yeah.
Is Steve Bannon.
Wow. Yeah, that, in fact, on social media now it says enjoy this, and then it's the perp walk, of Bannon in handcuffs getting marched off on his arrest, and I did sort of enjoy it actually.
So here's a guy who is arrogant as Trump, right? It's safe to say, and maybe even more so.
Oh yeah, right. Well, he's a little
smarter.
Well, you know, the thing about Bannon is that I think from his curriculum vitae, you know, it looks like he's a very intelligent guy, but all of his intelligence has been channeled into this kind of understanding of the mind in a manner that allows the mind to be manipulated for purposes of obtaining power. I've not heard him ever describe a policy that he was interested in implementing. I don't think he's a policy junkie at all. I think he's a power junkie who is sort of the, was it Goebbels who was Hitler? You know, he's the guy that's the one who understands the manipulation of the human mind in quite a effective manner. And his Breitbart, that whole news media thing that he was running for a while, was all about that as well. It was all about power. It wasn't so much about policy. It was attacking liberals and government for the purpose of installing, I don't know what.
And he's finally caught up in something he's not Donald Trump, right?
Well, he can't get pardoned by the existing president, at least. Although, you know, Donald Trump has said that if he gets elected,
yeah, I know
he's, now he's talking about pardoning all of the January 6th people, and I'm sure he can clean house for everybody that's his friend.
But Sandy, it's hard to you know, Bannon, and they concocted this idea: if you give us this money, we're going to finish building the wall.
Right.
Not on. Did you get a request to give them some money?
Yeah, I'm not on too many of those mailing lists, so I don't know if I did or not. But no, there's no question that some of the stuff he's done now, there's not really the defense that it's a political assault upon him. It's because he's clearly
guilty.
He cut his. Yeah. He was caught with his hand in the cookie jar, I think.
And so he was initially able to get pardoned by Donald Trump, but now I guess the state can go after him,
right? And the president can only pardon for federal offenses.
And I don't know, Sandy, if MAGA will threaten the riot if Bannon is locked up, right? I mean,
yeah,
yeah, he's still doing a lot of tough talk.
It could be that he's yesterday's story.
Yeah. Yeah, but, you know, and he's still talking tough.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, you're the attorney. You look at this at some points in time, Sandy. Even the attorneys can't save some of these guys, right?
No, I mean, what attorneys can do in today's world, however, is delay things.
And soften the blow?
Well, they can maybe soften the blow, but they can definitely delay things for a long time. And if you're old enough, they can delay it long enough so that you can finally plead fatal terminal illness.
And if you got enough money.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, Bill Cosby was able to delay that whole situation really a long time. And finally, to the point where he's going to a, you know, he did get physically very sick.
Right, right.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, if you can buy years and years with lawyers.
Let me, as we begin to wrap this up, we didn't mention Donald Trump once today. I intentionally didn't want to mention Donald Trump.
I think I did in the last minute or two there. I apologize.
Sandy, is it where are we at now with any of those things?
Well, you know, I think it's much better for all of us to talk about, if we're going to be critical of Donald Trump, what we ought to really do is talk about and think about why is it that Donald Trump has gotten all this attention and continues to have all these followers. And we ought to figure out how to talk to those people and not talk they to them, but talk to them and figure out how to put this thing back together again.
Well, we've tried that with CJ.
Well, but I'm not talking one at a time. I mean, you do it one at a time, but you might not do it with everyone, right?
So, right.
And maybe CJ's a lost cause. But
right.
I don't believe in lost causes. So,
well, I mean, you clearly probably every day you run into somebody who's one of those people. Right.
Sure,
and it may even have been friends.
But you understand, when they run into me, they think they're running into one of those people. But I mean, not one of them.
I know.
One of the others, and so that's a problem, you know. And we've got to figure out.
I don't know how you get that repaired.
Well, I just think
one by one.
Well, I think we have to figure out what it is they're thinking about, worrying about, and I think if we could figure out what the values are that we could all join on. I think the problem right now is that people live in two Americas, like I was saying, some of that involves their affluence, but some of it involves their values, and we do not have a shared value. For instance, this family value, the community family value. We don't have that. Europe does, and I think it's because their version of a village and a rural village looked different than ours.
Did we ever have it?
I'm not sure we did, because in Europe you go to a rural village and all the houses are clustered together and they walk a little distance to get to their farmland, and here all the farmhouses are located out on the farmland, and they have to go a long distance to get to a village. And the village doesn't involve a bunch of houses, it's just like four stores. There's no place in Europe that's four stores. You know, in Europe, it's a bunch of homes that belong to the land that circles the village. So I just think they had a sense of community that was cultural, and like de Tocqueville noticed long ago, America was built on a different basis of complete individuality, sort of the antithesis of community. And that lack of joint community value is keeping us from being together.
Well, all right. We got to get out of here. Thank everybody who made the show. Go. Thank you, Sandy. We'll be back on Monday. Enjoy a great weekend. Thank you, Connor. See you later.